Well, that was fun while it lasted for all of two games, I guess. This is adjusting for altitude.
Baseball is a difficult game. The average hitter gets on base in less than 40% of their plate appearances. Yet the average pitcher gives up 4 runs every 9 innings pitched. The sport is a challenge on its own. But in altitude, the problems for baseball players compound. Less break on pitches, balls that fly significantly farther than at sea level, and then after playing in such a treacherous environment, the players play in normality for half of their regular season. Adjustments must be made by those who don the purple pinstripes of the Colorado Rockies. We discuss those adjustments here. This is Adjusting for Altitude with baseball fanatic and aspiring MLB general manager, Christopher Nelson II.
Welcome to Adjusting for Altitude, episode number 4 of this fine podcast that we kicked off a few weeks ago. Today's episode is sponsored by, well, what was my hopes that the Rockies could be a little bit more of a different baseball team in 2023, but all hope is not lost yet. Just a little bit of it, most of it probably, but anyway, we'll see where that takes us. If you haven't listened to last week's episode, go ahead and do it. Episode 3 was pretty fire. I was a little bit tired, long week, grad school's kind of tough, who the thunk, but you know, we're getting through. But anyway, last week's episode was pretty good. Talked about some good stuff as it pertains to Colorado Rockies baseball. I don't know. I'm too focused on what I've witnessed just all around the last week. Go check out episode 3 though. Episode 3 was good. I'm just being a little bit facetious because I don't really know where to start with this week. Anyway, should also do a social media shout out. Go ahead and follow me on Instagram if you aren't already. Keep up with me and the latest happenings. I do post a lot of baseball related stuff on there occasionally. Go ahead and follow that Instagram over at I am the second, THASECOND after the IAM. Anywho, some news before we get into today's segment is that I'm dropping the MLB news segment from the show, at least in the meantime. I feel like there's plenty of stuff to talk about that's Rockies related. That we don't really need to get into a lot of the other stuff happening in the league at the moment, although it would be fun. I think there's just, like I said, there's a lot of stuff we could talk about that's Rockies related, and this is a Rockies baseball podcast first and foremost. So that's probably what we'll be doing most of. For now, I'm dropping the MLB news segment. We might bring it back here and there, but I wouldn't expect to hear it very frequently in these episodes in the near future. Anyways, why don't we just hop right into it? Take a look at how the Rockies last week went, even though I'm pretty sure y'all know how the last week went. Anywho,
this is Adjusting for Altitude's Week in Review.
All right, so as per usual, we got off to our usual Rockies opening day win. Feels like they've won most of their opening days over the last few years. If I'm not mistaken, they've won their last 3. Anywho, that was the case again this year. Rocks pulled off the win, obviously, on opening day. We discussed that last week. Friday, we had a matchup of Kyle Freeland and Nick Martinez. That was a pretty good one. And the Rocks came out on the top end of that scoreboard with a 4-1 victory in San Diego on Friday evening. Freeland looked spectacular. 6 innings, not a ton of strikeouts, but he didn't give up a run. And that's fantastic, because usually the team that gives up the fewest runs wins. Highlight of the evening was obviously the Charlie Blackman 2-run home run. That pretty much sealed the deal for the Rocks at that point in time, giving them a little bit of a gap for the bullpen to work with. 4-1 victory on Friday evening. Fast forward to Saturday evening, and things did not look as good for the Colorado Rockies for the first time in 2023. An 8-4 loss to the Padres that evening. Michael Wacha picked up the win for San Diego. Jose Ureña took the L for Colorado. Not a very good outing for Ureña, especially in his first one of the year. 2.1 innings pitched, 5 hits allowed, 4 runs all earned, 4 walks, no strikeouts, and a home run. The offensive highlights of the game for the Rockies were few and far between, but CJ Krohn did hit another home run on Saturday evening, much like he did on Thursday I don't remember if he hit one on Friday. He might have very well hit a solo home run on Friday, if I'm not mistaken. He has three so far this season. Anyway, the Rocks took the L on Saturday. Sunday, it was a much closer contest, but again, Rocks came away with an L. 3-1, San Diego took the afternoon setup. Seth Lugo picked up the dub for the San Diego Padres. And Austin Gomber, although he pitched pretty decently, took the L for the Rocks. He went six innings, gave up four hits, three runs, all earned. Two home runs really killed him. Even though he ended up with the quality start. Six innings pitched, three runs allowed. One walk, four strikeouts. So really not bad, all things considered, for Gomber. Just a tough one. The bats didn't get going in this game. Offensive highlight of this game would probably be Ryan McMahon. Ryan McMahon hit the home run for the Rocks in that game. Only run they got. And that left them with a series split against the Friars. On to L.A., going up a little bit north in California for a two-game set with the Dodgers. The Rocks lost the Monday night opener, 13-4. Against the Almonte, former Rocky picked up the win in that one somehow, someway, over Ryan Feltner. We're going to get into this game in a little bit more detail a little bit later on, because this should not have happened. Just bottom line, it should not have. Ryan didn't do too badly. He ended up getting booked for five runs over 4 2/3. Seven strikeouts, though. Now, he flashed some potential in this game. Also walked five, so that's not a great thing either. But all things considered, not terrible. We'll get into it again, like I said, a little bit later in this episode. But 13-4 was the L for the Rocks on Monday. And then on Tuesday, the final game of the two-game set, Rocks dropped that game as well, 5-2. Julio Urias picked up the dub over Herman Marquez. Herman didn't do terribly. I mean, five innings pitched, four runs allowed. Not his best work. Two walks, four strikeouts. Gave up three home runs. That's really what killed him. Just three really poorly placed pitches, but that's usually not like Herman. I expect him to recover from that pretty easily. Offensive highlight of the game. I mean, Jonathan Daza was 2-for-4, so you can't complain about that. He was the only Rocky that evening with two hits. Disappointing way to go into LA and perform, but they had an off day Wednesday. They came back home on Thursday for the home opener of the 2023 season. And of course, in classic Coors Field fashion, where the ball travels far on opening day, we had a 1-0 Colorado Rockies win. Kyle Freeland picked up the win over Josiah Gray. Freeland looked really good in this game, not gonna lie. He almost gave up a few runs, and honestly, Jurickson Profar saved him from giving up a few runs. But all things considered, Kyle threw over 12 innings pitched total this season, has not given up a run against the Nationals on Thursday. Freeland went 6.2 innings, 6 2/3, gave up four hits, walked two, struck out five, and of course allowed no runs. Also, shout out to Pierce Johnson, getting his first hometown save in Colorado as a hometown Colorado kid. Good to see. You'll love to see it. And then tonight, I'm actually uploading this episode at a late enough point in time to the point where a game was played on a Friday and I was able to react to it. 10-5, the Nationals picked up a win here in Colorado against the same man who took the first loss of the season for the Rockies. Jose Urania took the loss for the Rocks. Mackenzie Gore picked up the win for the Nationals. Urania went again 2.2 innings pitched, seven hits allowed, six runs, four earned, walked three, struck out one, and gave up two home runs, both of which were to start the game. The offensive highlights from this game, again, were relatively few and far between, but both Jonathan Daza and Charlie Blackman went 2-for-4. Ryan McMahon also hit a home run as well. But that's going to wrap up this week in Rockies Week in Review. Excuse me, I have something in my throat. Then we'll get into it. Alrighty. Well, where do we begin? I said it's kind of hard to pick a place to begin because the week started off so well with the 2-0 start, and then things kind of just tumbled right downhill from there. But I will start this week's episode by bringing up something that I brought up in last week's episode, which is the umpiring. Now, again, I'm not one of those fans who's usually on the umpiring for the job that they're doing. But it's been ridiculous, and it's worth a deeper dive in this week's edition of Deeper Dive.
It's time for a deeper dive.
Again, I ask for a second week in a row, what on earth is MLB umpiring doing the first week and a half of the season? What is going on? Now, I will be fair. Last week, it was all bad. And again, last week I said I don't know why umpiring seems to be so bad to start the year, but it's been about a week and a half now. I've seen a few more games from not just the Rockies, but across the league, so I've gotten a more diverse perspective on it. We're going to break down some things, and it's not all bad. I'm going to give the umpires some credit where credit is due in certain aspects of doing their job. Now, again, I recognize that there are a lot of new rules this year, and there's a lot more on the plate of MLB umpires. But nonetheless, they are paid a decent amount to do their job well. So just because there are new rules does not mean the expectation is now that, oh, you can slip up. You cannot do your job as well like you feel. But we're going to start with the ups this week for MLB umpiring, because there has, for the first few weeks of the season, been some pushback against this whole idea of the pitch clock. I know, shocker, shocker, people don't like change. Well, much like in spring training, people complained about it. People are still complaining about it now in the regular season, but for a few different reasons. Obviously, we saw a very critical pitch clock violation the first week of the year, opening day, actually. It was Rafi Devers who got called out in an at-bat where he looked like he had a chance to get on base. I'm not going to lie. That was one of the games I was watching. It was Orioles and Red Sox. He just hit a foul ball that was really close to being a home run, if it was fair. And the very next pitch, he gets called out on strikes because pitch clock violation. Now, people complained about it. Nonetheless, Alex Cora after the game, I actually think I talked about this last week. Alex Cora said, that's my guy's fault. That, like, Rafi does need to pay attention and get in the box. But it's good to see that umpires are not wavering under the pressure of the criticism of their execution of the pitch clock rules. I believe it was Wednesday afternoon where the Padres were playing the Diamondbacks, if I'm not mistaken, and Manny Machado was up at the dish. Now, a few of you have already probably heard about this, but for those of you who have not, we'll talk about it nonetheless. Manny Machado is standing in the batter's box. He's getting ready to take swing. It's not a super big situation. I should preface that. It's relatively early in the game. If I'm not mistaken, it's either the first or the second inning. It's his first at bat. And Manny Machado's on a 2-strike count. I don't remember how many balls there were, but the pitch clock is winding down. It's winding down. It's at 11. It's at 10. It's at 9. Manny's in the box. He's not engaged with the pitcher, which is the rule. You must be looking at the pitcher. Nonetheless, you don't have to be fully ready with your stance or anything. You just have to be looking at the pitcher with 8 seconds left on the pitch clock. Now, 8 seconds hits. Manny's not looking at the pitcher. Manny puts his head up at 8 seconds, but at a few seconds before, or a few split seconds before, he had put his hand up to call a timeout to the ump. Because you get one timeout per at-bat now, Manny puts his hand up to call a timeout because he realizes the pitch clock is coming down to 8 seconds and he's not ready to hit. Umpire doesn't give him time, and Manny's out on strikes because pitch clock violation. Manny did not like this. He got into a little bit of an argument with the home plate umpire. Bob Melvin came out, did the courteous, like, why is my guy thrown out? It's the first inning. Manny says something sneaky or cheeky and gets thrown out. People were kind of upset about this because Manny appeared to have his hand up, having called time with 8 seconds on the clock. Now, initially, you might be like, oh, that's fine. Surely he gets time with that, right? No. In basketball, there's a shot clock. If the shot clock is on 0 seconds and somebody calls a timeout with 0 seconds on the shot clock, there is no timeout granted. You have to call your timeout before 0 seconds hits, before the shot clock goes off. Same goes with the pitch clock. You cannot have your hand up at 8 seconds. At 8 seconds, you are supposed to be engaged with the pitcher. Manny was not engaged with the pitcher, and even though he had called time, he was not granted time because the shot clock had run out, so to speak. That's the ups of the week for umpiring. It's good to see them actually acting wisely in regards to these new rules. And also, there's some room there's like a little bit of wiggle room. Like, I think tonight in the Rockies game, Joey Meneses for the Nationals walked, or thought he walked at least. It was 3-1. pitch was a little bit outside. Umpire called it a strike. Meneses tossed his bat away because he thought it was ball four. Umpire called time, didn't tell the people upstairs to start the clock, and allowed Joey to go pick up his bat. A little sign of respect there. That's good to see. That's within the umpire's realm of abilities, is to be reasonable, right? Be reasonable. But it's good to see the umpires are not wavering under the pressure of this whole pitch clock thing and its newness. Now it's time for the downs, because last week, most of what I talked about in regards to umpiring is how bad the balls and strikes have been these first few games of the season. It hasn't been good. It just pitches outside of the zone being called strikes, pitches in the zone not being called strikes. It's been utter nonsense. And this is across several games now that I've watched with several teams. It's just quite crazy. Now, I've heard a conspiracy theory from a few MLB fans that I know that this potentially is going to be a way the MLB sets a precedent for introducing the automatic strike zone sometime within the next year or two. Now, I'm not going to say my piece on this. Honestly, I don't like the idea of the automatic strike zone. I don't like the idea of a pitch that nicks the strike zone by like a tad bit being called a strike because robots. But I mean, if it's a strike, I guess it's a strike. But ultimately, that's not something I think will be good for the game. Nonetheless, obviously, MLB was able to get their whole new agenda with the pitch clock up to the major league levels. And this has been something that's been talked about for years. So MLB has its way of getting things done behind the scenes. Unfortunately, I think the automatic strike zone might be one of the best reasons I've heard thus far as to why the umpiring has been so bad to start the season. There's really no excuse for it. Now, we do need to take some things in their appropriate context. There have been clips that I've seen of pitches being called way out of the strike zone as strikes. And then when you look a little bit closer, you see that the TV strike zone box that the broadcast puts up is off-centered. And in reality, it wasn't 6 inches off the plate. It was more like two. So that does make a little bit of a difference, right? But nonetheless, the point remains that it's still a ball. I wasn't going to go gung-ho against the umpiring until this week where the Rockies were affected by it and in a very significant way. Now, that might make me sound like a little bit of a homer. That's fine. I am a little bit of a homer at heart. However, I do like to approach these types of things from an objective perspective. And this is completely unacceptable. I mean, just unacceptable. There's no reason for this to happen. When we're talking about pitches outside the zone being called strikes, that's one thing, right? That's just maybe the pitcher had been absolutely dotting his spots in that at bat, and the umpire wanted to reward him a little bit by giving him a pitch that was a little bit off the plate, giving the pitcher a little bit of credit and saying, yeah, you've kind of been dealing this at bat. Let's just give it to you because you've earned it. You've earned that extra inch or so. This batter doesn't look like they're going to be doing anything, so I'll just give you the strike, right? I can understand that at least. But what there's no excuse for, unlike for pitches outside the zone being called strikes, there is never an excuse for a pitch inside the strike zone to be called a ball. Not one. Not one has there has never been a good reason for that to ever occur. Well, it happened on Monday evening for the Rockies against the Los Angeles Dodgers. Let's go back to that game real quick. It is the top or bottom of the fifth inning. The Rockies at this point in time are up 4-2 on the LA Dodgers, coming off of a 4-run top of the fifth to get their first lead of the evening against the very scary Los Angeles Dodgers, a team that they're probably not going to beat in this game nonetheless, but still, they have a lead more than halfway into the game. Anywho, bottom of the fifth inning, Ryan Feltner is still dealing. Like I said, 7 Ks in not even 5 innings pitched. Dude is starting to pick up his momentum throughout the game. 2 outs, bottom of the fifth, Freddie Freeman hits a double. And then the next batter, I don't remember who the next batter in this game is. I could probably go check because I have the box score right in front of me. Oh, yes, Will Smith. Will Smith is up at the dish. And it's a 3-2 count. And Ryan Feltner has a runner on second base and a 3-2 count against Will Smith. Ryan Feltner to this point in the game has struck out 7. This inning, I believe he struck out 2. Both of the first 2 outs were strikeouts, I believe. On a 3-2 pitch, Feltner locates a beautiful, while it was middle of the plate, it was a beautiful 95-mile-an-hour fastball at the knees of Will Smith. Will does not swing. Will is very clearly taken aback by this fastball, and it's called ball four. It is called ball four. Mind you, this pitch is not a borderline pitch. It is in the strike zone, literally in the strike zone. Not barely a centimeter of this baseball was not in the strike zone. That's how in the strike zone this pitch was. And it was called ball four. Like I mentioned earlier, the Los Angeles Dodgers had a 7-run bottom of the fifth in that game against the Colorado Rockies. All of those runs were scored with two outs after that should have been strikeout. So these things do start to actually have a very real impact in the game. Now, of course, that's not the only miss the umpire had all game long. There were some misses he had on both sides earlier in the game as well, probably circumstantially. Not once that I can recall, however, were any of those pitches inside the strike zone and not called strikes. They were all pitches that missed borderline-ish within an inch or two that umpire was like, yeah, fine, strike. This pitch was very obviously in the strike zone, called a ball, and it led indirectly to a 7-run inning. Sorry, the Rockies aren't coming back from that. The Rockies are not going to come back in an inning where they are now, have now given up 7 runs and are now at this point down 9-4. They're not going to come back in this game because that's just the way it is. Bottom line is, the umpiring this season has been completely inconsistent. It has been terrible. And I've heard people suggest that this is going to be the precedent setter for bringing in robot umpires. Now, some of you might be a little bit more astute than others and might think to yourself, wait, why on earth would umpires want to have an automatic strike zone? It's their job to call balls and strikes. Surely they'd be out of a job if there was an automatic strike zone put into place. And my friends, to those of you who thought that, unfortunately, that's not the case, because in the minor leagues, even though there's an automatic strike zone, the way the automatic strike zone works is that the automatic strike zone calls balls and strikes automatically, but there's a buzzer possessed by the home plate umpire that tells him what call to make. Umpires are not being put out of a job by implementing an automatic strike zone. They're simply having their job made easier. So there is no reason why umpires would really be against this. If this is truly the precedent being set, again, this is all conspiracy theory that I've heard from people who follow the game pretty deeply, nonetheless. But still, you can't help but wonder if this is kind of what is happening here, right? But that's where I'll leave the whole umpire discussion for now. It's just a little bit frustrating, especially when it costs a team like the Rockies, who wants to do their best to compete against a team like the Dodgers, a 7-run inning that ultimately sinks their chances of doing so. Nonetheless, we'll move on to our next discussion topic, and that is going to be the Rockies' first home series at Coors Field. Obviously, the opening day win was solid. Again, Jerkson Profar probably saved that from being a 2 or 3 run loss, but nonetheless, it counts as a win on the record, so you can't complain. Rockies did again lose tonight in pretty disappointing fashion. 10-5. But I do want to mention something that I saw in the opening game of this series. And it's in reference to something that I talked about, I believe, on episode 1 or 2 of this show, and it related to the issue of balls moving differently at altitude. Obviously, I discussed that we kind of have this whole interpretation of how balls move differently at altitude versus sea level from the wrong perspective. Everyone naturally defaults to thinking, oh my gosh, it's the breaking balls. They ain't moving the same here at altitude, which is true. Unfortunately, it's the fact that your fastballs do not move as much at altitude that is more impactful than the breaking balls, because the difference between breaking balls here at altitude versus sea level is really within about 1 inch or so of error. As opposed to fastballs, which have differences of up to 3 inches difference at altitude versus sea level. So this was put into action perfectly. This concept that I proposed was actually demonstrated very well in that opening game of the series. Eloris Montero showed up his first at bat of the game. I believe it was Josiah Gray on the bump. Josiah Gray was at this point in time working a 4-seam fastball and a slider mix. pretty effectively, I might add. He seemed like he was striking out Rockies left and right. Eluris Montero, however, took a fastball in on his hands and dumped a single into center field. Now, usually you'd be like, well, that happens all the time. This is not unexpected. But this is one of those moments that you would have had to have been watching to realize truly what was happening here. Josiah Gray throws a fastball. It ends up middle in. So Montero fists off a middle in fastball into center field for a base hit. Josiah Gray was not aiming that fastball middle in. He was aiming that fastball up and in. And now what happens here is if that pitch ends up and in, Montero does not have a bloop single to center field. Montero has a shattered bat back to the pitcher for an easy little 1-3. This just demonstrates perfectly exactly what I'm talking about. You see, if you had watched that at bat, maybe some of you recall it very vaguely, you might have noticed, if you were astute enough, that Josiah Gray's fastball seems to just maintain its plane. And up until the point that it reached the plate where it started to look like it was dropping a little bit. That's the only reason why Montero got a single on that play. Now, it might seem like we're overanalyzing a silly little Eluris Montero bloop single to center field, but what does that demonstrate? It demonstrates exactly what the analytics suggest. It demonstrates that if you have a fastball that is heavily reliant on spin for location, you are not going to have success at altitude. You are not, because you're going to aim a pitch up and in, and if you don't have that pinpoint control accuracy that most pitchers don't possess, unless you're maybe, I don't know, DeGrom or Scherzer, maybe Justin Verlander, unless you're one of those guys and a handful of others, you are going to significantly struggle to compete at Coors Field if your fastball spin rate is high. That's just the bottom line, because it means that you're going to be reliant on that spin to lift that ball or maintain its plane once it leaves your hand off the mound. Josiah Gray learned the hard way that pitching at altitude, it kind of sucks, because you start to give up little dinky-donk hits that otherwise would just be 1-3 putouts. Nonetheless, that's the biggest thing that I noted from the week. That and, I mean, Jose Ureña, oh brother. Jose Ureña, I had such high hopes for him because the potential for him to succeed at Coors Field is there. Like even tonight, you'll notice on the home runs he gave up, they were fastballs and they are just poorly located. Like, I mean, I don't remember the one he gave up. The leadoff home run, I know they were both fastballs. I don't remember the location of the leadoff home run, but I know that the home run he gave up to the second guy in that Nats order was a low and in fastball, like low and in to a lefty. That's a good hitter will put that over the fence more often than not. So I mean, I think, again, that's just strategy related, but Ureña has not demonstrated any control thus far this season, like control or command. By the way, I learned the difference between those two earlier in the week. For those of you who have ever sat down and listened to or watched a baseball related show or podcast or content in general, and you've heard them talk about command and you've heard them talk about control, and you're just sitting there thinking to yourself, what's the difference? Like, I can command a pitch, I can control a pitch. Apparently the difference is that control has to do with how well you can hit a spot that the catcher aims and sets you up for, and command is how well you can control that spot on pitches in the zone. So command has to do with strike zone location. Control is just location in general. So there you go. That's the difference. Ureña's had neither to this point in the year on really any pitches. It seems like his fastball, though, is just completely whack. I don't know why. His motion doesn't really allow him much room for error, just timing-wise, just because all the stuff he has going on, all that extra movement with the arm, it's really one of the most complicated windups in the entire league. Same thing in obviously a lesser capacity in the stretch, but I don't know what's going on with Jose Ureña. He needs to really find that control and command if he's going to find himself on this roster come mid-May, mid-June at the latest. Because you got, remember, we have Senzatella coming back. Senzatella had an ACL issue. He's looking like a May or June return might be very likely. So if that guy comes back, there's going to need to be a rotation spot made available. Freeland obviously has started off the year very well. Marquez, something similar, saved the start in LA. Gomber looked very solid in the loss that he took against the Padres, and Ryan Feltner flashed some very decent potential at the least against the Dodgers before he got screwed over by that one pitch that was a strike, not called a strike. Urania might find himself the odd one out. We're going to wrap up this episode coming up next. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Adjusting for Altitude. We will now wrap up today's episode with a preview of the week ahead.
The week ahead.
All right, all right. Let's take a look at what the Rocks got coming up this upcoming week. On Saturday, the Rockies take on the Nationals in game 3 of that series. It'll be Trevor Williams on the bump for the Nationals. Austin Gomber makes his second start of the year for the Rockies in that game, which starts at 6:10 p.m. Mountain Time. On Sunday, the Rockies and the Nationals wrap up their four-game series at 1:10 p.m. Mountain Time. Chad Kuhl, our old friend, will be on the bump for the Nationals against Ryan Feltner, making his second start for the Rockies, his first start at home, much like Gomber the night before. On Monday evening, the Colorado Rockies take on the St. Louis Cardinals, again here in Lodo, downtown Denver. Steven Matz has the ball for St. Louis in that game, and the Rockies have not officially announced a starter for that game, but in all likelihood, it will be Germán Márquez. On Tuesday evening, oh, I guess that game does start at 6:40 p.m. Mountain Time as well. I don't know if I mentioned that already, but it does. On Tuesday evening, that game also starts at 6:40 p.m. Mountain Time. It'll be Miles Michaelis on the bump for St. Louis. No starter again has been announced for the Rockies, but presumably it will be Kyle Freeland. Kyle Freeland will be making his second start at home in his third start of the year, presumably on Tuesday against St. Louis. Wednesday is the last game of that series with the Cardinals here in Colorado. 1:10 p.m. Mountain Time is the start time. No pitcher for either team has been announced, although it's likely that the Rockies will send out Jose Urania to try and finally get a good start under his belt, unless they feel inclined to make a roster move, which I doubt they do 2 weeks into the season. That will be the last game of that series against the Cardinals this week. The Rockies have an off day on Thursday before heading up to the Pacific Northwest to take on the Seattle Mariners in Seattle. No pitcher has been announced for St. Louis or Colorado. Presumably, it will be Austin Gomber in that game for the Rockies, though, as the Rockies look to knock off a pretty good Mariners team in Seattle. That game on Friday starts at 6:10 p.m. Mountain Time. But that'll wrap up today's episode of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed. If you haven't already subscribed to this podcast, you definitely should. And if you haven't shared it with anybody, you should definitely do that as well. Until next week, I hope you guys have a great rest of your week. Stay safe, stay cool, peace out. Most importantly, go Rockies.
This has been Adjusting for Altitude with Christopher Nelson II. If you are indeed a fan of Colorado Rockies baseball or simply a fan of MLB content, follow this podcast on your favorite podcasting platform and share this podcast with your friends and family. Baseball in Colorado is a complicated situation, but it is certainly not unsolvable. Until our next episode, take care and go Rockies.